again. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I was thinking today that we kind of are in this Milwaukee frame of mind the last couple of days with the art museum yesterday and today. We've been looking forward to this for some time. Milwaukee historian John Gerda is with us. He has an absolutely beautiful new book, Milwaukee City of Neighborhoods. It's based on his belief that every neighborhood has a story that's uniquely its own to tell. And there are so many stories here in the city of Milwaukee. And he has biked through many of these neighborhoods and talked with people and certainly knows the history of all the neighborhoods that make up Milwaukee. He is a lecturer, a tour guide, a local history columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is one of his previous books, The Making of Milwaukee, is the first full-length history of the community published since 1948. And Milwaukee Public TV created an Emmy Award-winning documentary series based on that book. Someone on Facebook, I like this introduction to John, wrote, knowing that we were going to interview him today, John Gerda, what a guy. He knows Milwaukee, he knows the state, and he knows biking. You can you love that? That's all I needed to say.
That's a trifecta.
And you biked here today. It's I freezing did. And it's windy.
No, it's warm enough. A little windy. little brisk out there.
Yeah. Well, it is a beautiful book, John.
Oh,
it
thanks,
is so
Kathleen.
You're a lovely writer, and the pictures are just gorgeous.
Yeah, 1,300 illustrations. Ah. And we were surprised. The graphic designer, Jim Price, Kate Hawley, and I, we were working on the screen for actually years. Now, we put this whole book together. And when we finally came off the press, this thing weighs 6 pounds, 7 ounces.
I know it's heavy. Believe me.
Somebody said, your words carry weight. So and what I said, most of my other babies were 8 pounds. This one's a little smaller. But the biggest thing I'm likely to write in my entire life. But it is, I think it's sort of an appropriate expression of the importance of neighborhoods in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
We are a city of neighborhoods.
And you say in the intro to the book, you did bike around and chat with people and observe closely and interact with all of these various neighborhoods.
That was the fun part. This goes back to the 1980s when the city of Milwaukee had a series of posters done by Jan Katowicz, and they are still in print, and they were ubiquitous for many years. And I wrote essays on the backs of each of those posters that if they were hung for display, no one ever saw.
Right.
So this was an attempt to salvage a lot of hard-won information. But that goes back 30 years, so I had to update every one of these posters, the essays. The earliest read and change, obviously, but then it took poking around the old neighborhoods, and we added 11 new ones. So there are 37 in all in the older part of town. And that required hundreds of miles of walking. I tried to avoid driving because you don't see much. A lot of biking, a lot of walking.
Mm-hmm.
And just falling into conversation with, as I put it, Milwaukeeans in the act of being Milwaukeans. And that's a lot of fun. It's a whole lot easier than writing.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a long book to write.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and I'm wondering if this is true of a lot of other places, that I've lived in Milwaukee for 40 years now, but people really do identify they where you're from. It's not just Milwaukee. It's the neighborhood, and there's a very strong identity with neighborhood.
And there certainly is. I think there tends to be a relative strength. Some have almost like a brand, like a Bayview or a Walker's Point or a Third Ward. Those are just intense in terms of how people identify with them. Others, perhaps, we think more in terms of sides in Milwaukee, the historic South Side, North Side, West Side. Those tend to be more universally accepted. But then within each of those, you have pockets, like a Story Hill or an Enders Park or a Silver City or a Clark Square that are the places that people go home to at night. They don't go home to Milwaukee. They go home
yes.
to Tippecanoe or North Milwaukee or Thurston Woods or Johnson Woods.
Absolutely. Let's start with the Third Ward then, because
okay.
it's a fascinating history. And it was a swamp?
It was a swamp early on. It's been everything. I think that neighborhood has had more lives than the luckiest cat. It has had so many incarnations. Begins as a swamp, becomes an Irish neighborhood back in the 1840s. And it was
1840s.
Called 1840s, wow. Which is very early. You know, Milwaukee as a city begins in 1846, incorporation. First land sale is 1835. But that was called the Bloody Third because it had the highest arrest rate in the city and the highest concentration of saloons in the city as well. So this was not a place you would have taken your out-of-town guests for a night on the town. It was
right.
Kind of a walk on the wild side. Then the Irish moved up. They moved out largely west, some north, but some mostly west, to neighbors like Merrill Park around 27th to 35th Wisconsin Avenue to the south. And in their place, the Italians come in, and in those years, it was largely Sicilians in the 1890s. And what hastened that exodus and reentry was a disastrous fire in 1892 that wiped out much of the, especially the riverside of the ward, so they had to build from scratch. At the same time, you have warehouses and light manufacturing plants going in there, so it became intensely non-residential alongside these rather flimsy immigrant homes. And by the 1950s, that was the most blighted section of Milwaukee and the focus of Milwaukee's very first urban renewal project. So that was torn down. And the area east of Milwaukee Street to this day, it looks like an office park because that's all new development, you know, since that area was cleared. And moved the Italians up to around Brady Street and farther north, and they tore down their church, Our Lady of Pompeii on Jackson Street, for the freeway in 1967. And there were enough bruised feelings about that displacement that the Italians decided in 1978 to have a reunion of the old Pompeii crowd on the Summerfest grounds. That's Festa Italiana.
No.
Something like 75,000 other people showed up, and it becomes the first of Milwaukee's ethnic festivals, and that was the catalyst for all that followed. So it's urban renewed, and then as it deindustrialized, those plants moved elsewhere, and a lot of them were just empty. And I think at the low point, there were 70 or 80 people living in the Third Ward, so it was a no-person's land.
And now?
Now, it was at such a low point, Kathleen, back in the 70s, that they proposed turning it into a combat zone, kind of adult-themed businesses. And there was just enough of a saving remnant of business people and activists in the area to say, no, not going to happen here. So they began to campaign for kind of reinvestment, redevelopment, and the rest, just look at it. You know, you have the old Commission Row, which was the place you got your fruits and vegetables, is now the Gennaro's, the Goldman's. We look at that today and say, hard to believe, they're a chocolatier, high fashion. There was a dog supply store in there. Talk about a change. The galleries, the lofts, the apartments. The old garment district there along Water Street, where there have been places just making knitwear. Now there are balconies with lawn chairs and plants on them. So.
All up and down the river, all the way to Lake Michigan.
Yeah, an amazing transformation.
Yeah, it is indeed. The area where we are now, let's talk about the Juneau Town and Kilburn Town, which also dates back a long, long time ago, two enclaves that became a downtown.
Absolutely. We're on 4th and Wisconsin in the Rice Building, and you're in Kilburn Town here, and the other side of the river is Juneau Town. And in some ways, that rivalry between those two, Solomon Juneau and Byron Kilbourne on either side, sort of set the tone for Milwaukee's sidedness and the tone for neighborhoods as well. They fought a small-scale bridge war back in 1845 and finally joined forces in 1846. And when they joined each side, when they had finally had bridges, they joined at an angle because their street systems were developed independently. There was no felt need to rationalize their street systems before there were bridges. So you look out your window, Kathleen, you can see Wisconsin Avenue, still a dogleg when it crosses from west to east. And
interesting.
That's going to be a civic antique here for a very long time to come.
You talk about historic preservation and the fact that it was a lot of it was going on in the 1970s. Milwaukee had not seen a lot of redevelopment, so there were a lot of buildings. There are a lot of historic buildings
there
in
sure
the area
are
where we are,
there
aren't
sure
there?
There sure are. There are. And downtown's been, a lot of sites have been developed, redeveloped, and redeveloped again, so there's been a lot of change here. Neighbors like Walker's Point, which is the oldest in Milwaukee on the south side, that area has seen relatively little change, so in many cases the first building on the site is still there. It's still there all these years later. But in Milwaukee's downtown, especially after World War II, there was kind of a lack of development pressure, and it was more benign neglect than foresight that allowed these buildings to stay. And by the 1960s, the freeway era, a lot of clearances going on, but then fortunately, that was a relatively narrow window. Then by 1970 or so, nationally and locally, we're saying, we're not going to build these anymore, so take care of them, preserve them, fix them up, reuse them. And as a result, large sections of Milwaukee's downtown, though there are areas around, say, Broadway in Michigan, some of those buildings there people would like to encase in amber. The Grand Exchange, the Hilton Garden Inn, which is the old Northwestern Mutual home office, the Mitchell Building, and all those commercial buildings on the east side of Broadway. People who, if they could magically come back from the 1880s, they would recognize it.
Oh, my gosh.
They would know where they
are. That's quite a thought. Isn't that interesting? Hey, let's go back to Walker's point. The first company town.
That was Bayview.
That was Bayview. That wasn't Walker's point.
And Bayview begins. That's unique. The entire city. Back in 1868, there was an iron mill put down there and what's now the end of the Dan Hone Bridge. Long gone. The footings are still there, but there's no evidence of there ever having been an employer that had roughly 1,500 workers.
Ooh.
And was the second largest maker of railroad rails in the entire country. So they get going in 1868, and they wanted to be out there because it was had access to rail, access to water, and it was just enough beyond Milwaukee proper so they could build this sprawling plant. And they incorporated in 1879, so Bayview was Milwaukee's first suburb. And now Milwaukee's kind of growing out to meet it. The city line was Lincoln Avenue. So people on the Bayview side are making do with backyard wells, cisterns, and outhouses. People on the Milwaukee side have running water.
Oh, fascinating. I didn't know that.
Indoor plumbing. So people on the Bayview side, against the express wishes of the mill management, were quite happy to pay city taxes for city services. So in 1887, Bayview joined the city of Milwaukee. So it was a suburb for only 8 years. Then it became a neighborhood. And it was a little like getting married and keeping your name. It is still Bayview. And Bayview kind of informally annexed, though, the area north of Lincoln Avenue up to Bay Street. So that's a really strong neighborhood. And talk about reinvestment in just the last 15 years. It's become really hot for restaurants, night spots, and housing as well.
How does that happen, John, to certain areas? How did they become like the third ward? How did Bayview become the place?
It's a good question. I'm not sure there's a magic formula to it. I think it's sort of an intersection of appetite and what the resource offers. In the Third Ward's case, you have all these old industrial buildings with an awful lot of exposed brick, exposed beams, high ceilings. And back in the 50s, that would have been very unpopular. In the years since 1990, it's been really popular. And what place in the state has more exposed beams and open brick than the Third Ward? So it kind of intersected with a change in taste. In Bayview's case, what's not to like? It's on the lake.
Mm-hmm.
It's 5 minutes from downtown. The housing is affordable. There's an awful lot to do there, a lot of green space from the parks to Seminary Woods. So people who, for instance, maybe been on the east side, River West, and those neighborhoods certainly have a lot of virtues. But people, you know, saw kind of the neighborhoodness of Bayview and, you know, voted with their feet. Now, my kids who are now in their 30s, when they were in high school, we lived in Bayview for 37 years. They asked, why couldn't we move to the east side? Because that was kind of the hip place to be.
Mm-hmm.
All their friends live in Bayview now.
So, I'll bet they do. That's right.
Quite a change.
It is quite a change. We're going to welcome phone calls for John, too. I don't mean to ignore you, the audience. John's new book has just been published, Milwaukee City of Neighborhoods. It weighs how many pounds? 6 pounds?
6 pounds, 7 ounces.
And worth every single pound. It's beautiful. His writing is beautiful. And how many pictures?
1,300.
1,300 pictures of all of Milwaukee's different neighborhoods. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Before we go to phone calls, Menominee Valley, for many years when I lived here, that was just an eyesore. It kind of smelled.
An embarrassment.
It was an embarrassment, and it's totally changed in the last few years.
Yeah, I was doing a tour for the Shorewood and Whitefish Bay High School classes of 1955, earlier this summer, and some of the people had not been in town for 40 years. I took them down to the valley, their jaws dropped. One guy said this could be a different city.
He
did not recognize it. So that was kind of the downside was deindustrialization. There were once tens of thousands of jobs down there. Those are largely gone. But there is now clean industry on the west end, so at least hundreds of jobs have come back. But now the Pottawatomie Casino opened back in 1991. The Harley-Davidson Museum followed.
Yeah.
So the idea of that being a destination for tourists would have been unthinkable, mm-hmm. you know, 25, 30 years ago. But again, it's proximity, and it's sort of someone taking a chance and saying, this is a place that we should invest in. Three Bridges Park, the Hank Aaron State Trail, no, now it's recreation as well. So a lot going on down there. A great spot to bike. You can go from downtown Milwaukee out through the valley all the way out to about 94th Street in West Allis and head on to the Pewaukee Trail or the New Berlin Trail out to Waukesha. So
all the way to Waukesha.
Oh, yeah, great bike link.
Ooh. And historically, its importance?
Hugely important for the Native Americans. The word Menominee means wild rice in the native tongue. So this is a grocery store for the Native Americans who made their homes here. It is responsible for the South Side's existence. So if you were to do a story of the Menominee Valley and the South Side, the Valley's chapter would begin, in the beginning was the Valley, because that's why it's there. It was the geographic border in Milwaukee. And then in 1869 and later, the valley was filled in and covered with machine shops, tanneries, lumber yards, coal piles, the Milwaukee road shops. And there were tens of thousands of jobs there, and that was the biggest single concentration of employment in the entire state. Hmm. People would walk from as far north as North Avenue, as far south as Lincoln Avenue, or take the streetcar, but often walk. So they would talk about the bucket brigade of workers who would pour in there in the morning with their lunch pails and pour out again in the afternoon. So it was not a pretty place, and the Menominee River itself was pretty much an open sewer, but it was hugely important economically.
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls for you. 800-486-8655 is our number, and we start with Connie in Grafton. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I've just moved to the area recently, and I'm kind of naive to Milwaukee, but everybody keeps talking about the Third Ward, which you were just talking about. And I've asked everybody, where does that name come from, and exactly what does it entail? What part of Milwaukee from what, you know, the boundaries? Because I'm like, that's so weird, and nobody's ever been able to answer that question.
Oh, the guest we have today can answer that question, and then some.
That's an easy one. When Milwaukee incorporated back in 1846, there were five wards. The first and third were on the east side of the river. Second and fourth were on the west side of the river, and the fifth was on the south side. So those were the five that determined the entire city. And the original Third Ward borders were around Wisconsin Avenue down to the point where the Milwaukee River enters the lake. So think of it as between the lake and the river south of Wisconsin Avenue, now basically south of around St. Paul. So it's that area, very well defined.
You haven't been there yet, Connie?
What's that?
You haven't been there yet.
Probably without knowing it. I'm too afraid to drive down there by myself and get lost. I ended up where they load up the ships and boats accidentally on my own one night in the dark, and that was enough to scare me back.
That's Jones Island. That's a whole different animal. the third ward is...
Where do they get the ward name from? I mean, is it just the sections of the properties and things like that? Is that where the ward...
Ward was they still have wards. These are what the aldermen and alderwomen represent. So they are the political subdivisions of the city.
Okay. And the third, because we don't use any of the other five ones, it's just the third one is always stuck?
Yes. And part of that was the strength of the old Irish presence. And then the developers back in the 1970s when the area began to come back, that became a very convenient handle. It was also so well-defined geographically, you know, between the water and the northern streets that it was a pretty easy box to name. There are some people now who are calling the Walker's Point area the Fifth Ward, and what they're doing, obviously, is trying to ride the coattails of the Third Ward. But more properly, that's Walker's Point. No, that was the original settlement on the south side.
Well, thank you so much, and sure. I am enjoying exploring Milwaukee. It's just a beautiful place to adventure out.
Oh,
so
wonderful,
thanks.
Wonderful.
And I appreciate this.
Sure, enjoy the Third Ward. It's hard to get lost there.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Connie. Milwaukee is a fairly easy city in which to get around. It's because of the lake, I think. And you always know where east is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You may feel the same thing, Kathleen. When I'm on the west coast for any period of time, I get disoriented because the water's on the wrong side.
Exactly. When I'm in Madison, I get disoriented because
true.
The water's not, it's in several places.
That's right. And it's also, we're on the grid system.
Right.
I think it's a little like Chicago, same pattern, but there's enough geographic interest, you know, so it's not kind of these unrelieved angles. When you go down to Bayview in the east side, you have the street system paralleling the lake kind of coming into contact with the north-south-east-west grid. it gets pretty interesting, which is kind of a cab driver's nightmare, but gives both of those sections of town a very strong sense of place.
Tell me about the neighborhoods in Milwaukee, and I'm thinking about Sherman Park particularly, and I'm sure there are others. Milwaukee, as you well know, has been derided for its segregation, and there have been some very difficult times with when it comes to race relations in the city of Milwaukee. Yeah. Where have there been attempts to really bring people together early on through grassroots organizations?
Sherman Park's a good example, and that was settled in the 1920s, where all those bungalows came from, period revival homes, just some great housing out there, as you know. But the movement early on was German and Jewish to that section of Milwaukee, and then later on from the same source neighborhoods, African-American, coming to the area. And by the 1970s, I think the slogan was Sherman Place, a great place to live, a fine place to live. And a lot of what they were trying to promote was diversity. Mm-hmm. They were trying to promote peaceful racial relations. And it became a real haven because of the great housing for middle-income African-Americans and whites as well, mixed-race couples as well in the area. And that experiment was really a success for a generation. Now it's largely African-American. People have, the whites have moved, kept on moving out to the north and west. So it is less integrated than it was. It is more intensely African-American. And that's kind of the pattern in U.S. cities. This is not unique to Milwaukee. There are diverse neighbors that have remained diverse in Milwaukee, and not as intentionally as Sherman Park had done it. One good example is River West and the area east of Houlton to the Milwaukee River. And that area has, from the 19th century, been just this crazy quilt of different cultures. Today, African-American, Puerto Rican, kind of a punk element there, countercultural element. And near the river, people just like the access and the proximity to nature, because these wonderful parks right along the Milwaukee River. So that area has been an unintended, perhaps, but a very successful experiment in living together. Another one is on the near south side. Back in 1967, there were marches for open housing that targeted for a number of nights the near south side, and just a violent reaction. Some really hateful photographs from that period. Today, integration on the near south side, Clark Square, Walker's Point, is an accomplished fact. And besides the African Americans, it's Latino, largest Latino section in Milwaukee, Native American, some Southeast Asians as well, and as well as Europeans. So, a really interesting mix.
Yeah. Let's go to Kate in Milwaukee next. Hi, Kate.
Hi. I'm real happy to hear about this. I'm wondering about the influence of the two major universities on their neighborhood. Some of us remember the controversy of President DiIulio buying up a lot of land west of Marquette and trying to close off Wisconsin Avenue, but even take us back to 1881 when the university started, or even any comments about UWM is now expanded to having its footprint downtown and even on the east side.
Yeah, you're right. Both of those institutions have had major impacts on their surroundings. In Marquette's case, that began as a neighborhood called Torrey Hill, south of Wisconsin Avenue, which was an Irish working class neighborhood where the Irish moved from the Third Ward. And Marquette actually begins on 10th and State back in 1881. On the hill by the safety building there, which is why they were called the Hilltoppers in those early years. And they did not move to Wisconsin Avenue until 1907 when they put up Johnston Hall. And that's the hall just east of Jesu Church. Jesu, you think of as being the campus church. It was a parish church for the Irish who lived in Torrey Hill. And Johnston Hall was the only campus building for a number of years. That was all of Marquette. Over the years, Marquette has expanded mightily and pretty much vaporized what had been left, along with the Marquette Interchange, vaporized what was left of the old Torrey Hill neighborhood. And especially in the last 15 years, the Campus Town Project has moved west, and Marquette is by far the largest influence on a neighborhood called Avenues West, which goes out to 27th Street. And those hospitals, Deaconess, where I was born, was torn down and is now the dental school. Children's Hospital is a dorm. So been major changes there. And I think Marquette has been an influence on the neighborhood that has changed and in some ways denatured the old residential area. At the same time, Marquette's a hugely important resource for Milwaukee. I'm not talking about just about basketball. No, this is an educational resource that has helped Milwaukee with a brain gain. A lot of those Marquette kids come from far away, and a lot of them stay, you know, which is very important. In UWM's case, that begins back in 1956 on the foundation of the Old State Teachers College, which is Mitchell Hall, kind of the old main on that campus. And they began with about 4,400 students, grew up to 25,000 within just a few years, and had a huge impact on culture, on certainly the housing market, and on parking. You
know,
that's been a big deal. So it's kind of, you know, the town gown controversy is sort of ageless wherever you are. But I'd argue on balance, UWM has been good for that neighborhood as well. The culture, the investment, the traffic, the energy, the vitality, the buzz, you know, is very much part of a university scene.
Thanks very much, Kate, for your call. We'll take more calls for John Gerda. John's latest book he's written, is this 22 or 21?
That's 21.
This is 21.
Right.
I was just 21.
old enough to drink.
All right. John's latest book, his 21st, is Milwaukee, City of Neighborhoods, and it's a beauty. We'll take more phone calls momentarily. 800-486-8655. John looks at 37 neighborhoods in this book, and they all have a different sense of who they are and how important they are to the people who live there. So we'll continue. If there's a neighborhood that you would like to know about, and some of you are calling in about just that, actually. So, or you live in a neighborhood and you'd like to extol its virtues or its problem areas, we'd like to hear from you. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls for John. Mary Ann in Oshkosh. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi. I'm calling because I grew up in Milwaukee. I didn't hear any mention. Though my name is now Polish, I was Irish. But the area I grew up in was near Dorothy Endress Park. It was just north of Center Street, 60th Street West. From 76th Street, there was nothing until after the Second World War.
That's right.
And it was a great neighborhood. We had people of all ethnic and religious. And it was a very small because the Holy Cross Cemetery up on Burleigh Street stopped it from. But it was a very close neighborhood, and I just would like it mentioned. I know I have a friend who still lives in that same area.
I used to take my dog there all the time, every other day. It's a great neighborhood.
I'd still call that a close neighborhood. And that goes back to the 20s early on, some of those period revival homes, and then a long time out for the Depression and World War II. And then, after World War II, it kind of finishes out towards 76. But you're right, that was open fields, you know, past 76.
It's hard to imagine, isn't it? Open fields there.
Yeah, Mount Mary, you know, that was put there back in the 1920s, and that was a campus kind of out in the country. But the real focal point for Endress Park is Endress Field, named after Dorothy Endress, who was this legendary figure who kind of ran the recreation division in Milwaukee. And she has a great line that we quoted in the book. You work to make a living, you have recreation to make a life. And that was really part of her philosophy. So there's this wonderful park with a great sculpture, which is the feature on the poster, you know, that we used to introduce, a brand new poster we used to introduce that chapter. A very active neighborhood group there, integrated, and certainly a strong sense of kind of working on things together. So Endress Park is doing just fine. Friends who live up there, and they love it. Wouldn't move elsewhere.
Yeah, it's nice. Baseball field. Nice baseball field.
Yep.
Little place to wade. Yeah. If you're young. Yeah. All right. Anything else, Marianne?
No, just thank you for mentioning it and keep on with it. Oh, my husband is a relation of you, John. Okay. Somehow or other, he's a Polack, and I was Irish and he was Polack. He grew up across from Kosciuszko Park.
Oh, okay. Or as they say it down there, Kosciuszko.
Kosciuszko Park, yeah. Thanks very much for the call. Another thing in Bayview, this caught my attention, because you normally don't think of these groups, the painted signs that showed, that had to be printed in different languages back in, I'm not sure what the year was, but there are groups that we don't normally think of inhabiting Milwaukee. Czech, Hungarian?
Yeah, there's a sign we put it in the book. It says essentially a safety warning, but it begins in English, and I think it's in Serbo-Croatian, Hungarian, Italian, and Polish. So it's kind
Isn't that interesting?
And back in the day, you know, the ethnic workforce was, you know, largely immigrants, and they kept the industries going.
Yeah, Thanks so much for the call. Harrison in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Harrison.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you?
Great. Listen, this is a great topic today. But I wanted to know, looking forward, which neighborhood that you can look in a crystal ball and see has the most potential to be the next Bayview or Walker's Point, Third Ward, with development and all that?
Well, it's hard to ask a historian questions about the future, but I think one strong pattern emerging, especially on the south side, is Bayview is seeing a lot of redevelopment energy and Walker's Point. And part of that's something of a spillover or extension from the Third Ward. But Walker's Point has come back to life, and Mitchell Street. You know, there is market-rate housing going up there,
really?
And some of the old commercial buildings. Hmm. Public Library, I'm on the board. We're building a new branch library in the old Hills Department Store on 9th Street. And it's pretty easy to see that zone between Bayview and Walker's Point. To the east, the Harbor District is the focus of a lot of redevelopment energy. It's pretty easy to see that area really coming to life in the next 10 to 15 years. Another area that's kind of going on, Brewers Hill is heading north, and the Harambe area, which begins at North Avenue, these wonderful old homes, it's historic district homes on 1st Street, 2nd Street, Palmer, between North and Center, east of King Drive. Gorgeous homes, and I think you're seeing more interest in that area as well. So kind of people are rediscovering the older part of town, and they're kind of voting with their investment dollars. So I think there's an awful lot of energy in some of our oldest neighborhoods.
Hmm. Yeah, I see it too, and I also, because I see, mostly because of access to downtown and what's going on along the in the valley and such. I think that's important as well.
Right. There are a lot of recovering suburbanites, who are finding homes in the heart of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Thanks, Harrison, for the call.
Thank you.
I wonder how much of this is true for other neighborhoods. You write in writing about Milwaukee's oldest neighborhood, Walker's Point. Some residents describe their neighborhoods as a living museum of housing types and styles dating from the city's earliest years. Are there lots of neighborhoods in Milwaukee that can fit that description?
Not a lot, Kathleen. Bayview, certainly. Parts of the west side, certainly. Walker's Point, most obviously. Brewers Hill, a good example. Lower East Side, around Brady Street. Those have very substantial bodies of housing stock from the late 1800s.
Mm.
So then you get up to, part of the reason we chose, I said it was in the interest of time, space, and sanity. We decided to kind of limit it to the older, the pre-World War II section of town, with the exception of places like Enders Park, Thurston Woods, Johnson's Woods. When you get beyond that, the development tends to be somewhat more monolithic. Cape Cods, ranch houses, and that goes on for miles because that was the most explosive building boom in the nation's history and Milwaukee's. So there tends to be, there are neighborhoods there as well, but they tend to be somewhat more not as visually interesting, perhaps, as the older part of town. So that's kind of the historic hearth and heart of the city.
Thanks, Harrison, for your call. Let's go to Earl in Medford. Hi, Earl.
Hi. I want to talk about frozen custard stands.
Oh, so do I. Great.
I grew up around Gillies back in the 1930s near Pius High, 76th and Blue Mound. Also Cops, a place for Happy Days.
Sure.
And Leon's, and every time I go back there, there's always a fight with somebody as which is the best.
And you will not settle that one. That is beyond settling. I'm a Southsider, so it was the Schneiders family who ran Leon's. No, that was the one that we would go to. And people who come from out of state are always surprised at frozen custard. The things that distinguish it are less air and more butterfat.
Right, exactly.
That's what makes it different from ice cream. Why it's called custard is anyone's guess, aside from the smoothness. But that is actually Bobby Tanzillo from out of Milwaukee. Is writing a book about frozen custard. So in the next year, I think his deadline is March, he told me. So look next year. Check his name, Tanzillo, T-A-N-Z-I-L-O, and he's the author of what will be the standard work on custard.
I'm Gillies, hungry.
Yeah, I know.
Sounds
Gillies
good.
The fights between Market High and Pius after football games, that was kind of a Friday night ritual back in the 1960s and 70s. But that's certainly those are culinary landmarks and remain so to this day.
Yeah. Thanks, Earl.
Thanks.
Yeah. Bye. Here's a Facebook comment from Adam. How big an impact did Al Chalmers have on Milwaukee?
Incalculable. 20,000 workers at Al Chalmers. And that's not just that West Dallas plant, but the other plants around the area. They were by far the largest private employer in Wisconsin, and just huge in terms of the not just the numbers of jobs, but the kinds of jobs, everything from engineering to people working in foundry to simply laborers. And sometimes when I'm giving talks, I'll talk about Alice Chalmers as kind of the test case or a case study of industrial growth and industrial decline. They went bankrupt in 1987. They're gone, completely gone. And I'll ask for a show of hands how many people had a relative, close friend, or close neighbor who worked at Alice Chalmers. And routinely, it's about a quarter of the audience. So there's maybe 2 or 3 degrees of separation in terms of the impact Alice Chalmers had on the workforce. So if you're looking for reasons for some of the entrenched poverty in Milwaukee, it's the lack of jobs at places like Alice Chalmers that has really removed opportunity from the lower rungs of the economic ladder. So yes, Alice Chalmers was hugely important. In terms of its physical footprint, obviously West Allis exists because of Alice Chalmers and related industries. But the city neighborhoods nearby, one called Johnson's Woods, which is just west of Miller Park, that was largely West Allis workers, including Alice Chalmers workers, who walked to work. And those huge plants, they made, I think, at one point, I think it was 1,600 different products and everything. This is not just, bobby pins and nails. No, this is marine diesels and hydro turbines, all kinds of mills for various applications. So they were among the biggest heavy equipment manufacturers in the world, and made more equipment by weight for the Manhattan Project that resulted in the atom bomb than any manufacturer in the country.
Huh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, very big deal.
Somebody who wants more information, and I do too, actually, the little neighborhood that has a lot of dead-end streets, an amazing number of dead-end streets. Rick in Eau Claire, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Rick.
We're here.
Oh, I almost missed you here. I got distracted. We just drove by Lake Alley here and found a nice place to park. Yeah, I'm wondering.
I thought you were having a custard or something.
No.
Okay.
I'm just wondering how did Pigtown get its name? Why is it named Pigtown?
Pigsville.
Pigsville, although it actually was back in 1894, there was a newspaper reference to Pigstown. And I did a small book back in 1980 called The West End, Merrill Park, Pigsville, and Concordia. That's kind of an early treatment of the same kinds of subjects that are in the City and Neighborhoods book. And I collected theories about where the name came from. And one of the most creative was that the Menominee River makes a very sharp bend right around the neighborhood. And during times of high water, rain would wash the pigs off their farms in Wauwatosa into the river. They float downstream, and when the river turned, the current was slow, and they'd kind of clamber up into the neighborhood. That was one theory. Another was that there was a man named George Pig, P-I-G-G, who had a stagecoach stop there back before the Civil War, so the name was derived from him. I met a woman finally whose family was among the first down there, who said that while the houses were going up on the east bank of the Menominee River, there was a farm still in operation on the west bank run by a man named Freis, F-R-E-I-S, F-R-E-I-S, and he raised pigs. So the name Pigstown appears back in 1894, and my theory is that somebody invented a Mr. Pig, P-I-G-G, to give the neighbor just a little more cachet, a little higher class. And working on that book, I tried really hard, looked at the old tavern records, census records, whatever I could find to try to establish a Mr. Pig somewhere in that neighborhood, could find no one. So 1G is the proper spelling, and it relates to the animal that was raised on the West Bank as the area was developing.
Yeah. And there are so many dead-end streets because why?
Because it's this really tightly defined geography. You've got the I-94 hill to the south, the Merrill Park hill to the east, the Menominee River to the west, and Miller Brewing to the north. So it is really hemmed in. There are fewer now, but at its peak, I think Pigsville had 300 households, and there are, 11 streets and 7 end and dead ends. So it's not on the way to anywhere. You don't go there unless you live there or you're lost, or occasionally I'll take tours down there, and it's a lot of fun. People, it's always a high point.
I'm sure it is.
Because you can see the whole neighborhood in about 5 minutes. You can hang around there and go back at night and go to the Valley Inn, which is the old Hutterer's Hut, which what to think. They have taco nights. They have homemade pizza nights.
Ooh.
Good neighborhood to have. I've been in the same family since 1955.
Nice.
So it is about as neighborhood a bar as you can find in Milwaukee. And at one time, there were butcher shops, grocery stores, bakeries. It was almost self-sufficient.
Huh.
So really interesting section of town.
Yeah.
And the group down there, the largest one was Slovaks. Also, there were some Russians, some Poles, some Serbs, but Slovaks were the largest. And today, it's very mixed.
Hmm.
But still, it's a strong, strong sense of place.
I don't know if I've ever been
there. Is
that
right?
After all these years.
To get down there
terrible?
To the Valley Inn.
Yeah, yeah, and then go back at night and
sure,
have
yep.
food, right? Sounds like a day and a half. 800-486-8655 is our number. John Gerda is our guest this hour, and John's latest book is just a beauty, Milwaukee, City of Neighborhoods. John, of course, is the author of many, many books on Milwaukee. He's been studying the city since 1972, and this one is an intimate look at the many neighborhoods that make up Milwaukee, 37 of them, and he explored them by bicycle and having conversations with the people who live in those neighborhoods. It's so well done. 800-486-8655 is our number. One line is open. If you would like to join us, we can accommodate you. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The book is available in bookstores, or how? Wait, there we go.
It's published by the Historic Milwaukee, which mm-hmm. is the premier architectural preservation education organization in town. They run Doors Open, they run Spaces and Traces, so a very active group. And we are not selling it at on Amazon or the large chains. We're selling it through independent booksellers.
Very nice.
Including Boswell Books on Brady. And online, you can get it from historicmilwaukee.org. So you can have your order filled in short order by Historic Milwaukee by going online, historicmilwaukee.org. And you can also get Milwaukee County Historical Society on 3rd and Kilbourne is selling it as well. And if you're a nonprofit in the older part of town, we put aside 500 books to give away for free.
Oh, nice, John.
So trying to get them to schools, churches, community groups, youth centers, libraries. So trying to get this into the neighborhoods about which it is written.
Very, very nice. All right. Have you done a Boswell event yet or not?
That's December 2nd, I think.
December 2nd. You'll be there to do a conversation. And
conversation, yeah. I'll talk about neighborhoods and be happy to sell and sign.
Good. Great. Jerry is next in Waukesha. Hi, Jerry.
Good afternoon. Thanks for letting me participate. Very briefly, I live right next to Andaris Park in what's described on my house deed as Lenox Heights. And I went to school in Walker's Point at the old boys' tech, but I was wondering, maybe he's researched this and said it in one of his other books, but did he run across the name Dirty Helen? Finished reading a book about her, and she had a tavern, I believe, on St. Paul around 22nd Street.
That's right.
Kind of a well-renowned woman, and had you touched on that in this book or any of your other books?
No, there's a whole book about Dirty Helen, kind of an as-told-to book. She began as the madam of a brothel up in Hurley, Wisconsin, when during the lumber years it was said that the three hottest places in the world were Hayward, Hurley, and Hell. So she was a colorful character. She ran kind of a wide-open bar down there in St. Paul, and the trick was, if you were going in there, it was sort of guys only. This is not a place you go on a date. It was kind of rough.
Wouldn't think so.
Rough around the edges. And she would not sell mixed drinks. It was just sort of shots and beers. So what people would do, they had a kind of a newbie in there, kind of a rookie, maybe the new guy in the sales team. You know, they bring him down there to drink after work, and they say, go up and order a vodka martini. And she would just ream the guy out. So, they did it just to get a reaction.
Right.
So she was certainly colorful. And that era in the Menominee Valley's history in the area around Torrey Hill, no, long gone, that area has been pretty much deindustrialized and denatured, but there were a lot of colorful bars down there, and hers was probably the most colorful.
What year, John?
After 1940s, 50s, so not all that long ago, a while back.
Deborah is next in Fox Point. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
This is something that a lot of younger people aren't going to know what we're talking about, but I think you'll know, John, and I don't know if you're from Milwaukee, Kevin.
I'm from Chicago, but I've lived here longer than anyone.
Almost a native.
Exactly.
Okay, well, speaking of old phone exchanges, and you could tell geography by them. I'm going to give you the phone exchanges where I went to high school and see if you can figure out where I went to high school.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Go ahead.
Okay. Our exchange was Hopkins.
Okay, north side.
In my neighborhood was Uptown.
Okay.
Hilltop, Flagstone.
Yeah, you're a West Sider.
More north.
Oh, Sherman Parkish, that area?
Further north.
Okay. How far?
Hampton, Villard.
Okay, North Milwaukee. Okay. I'm a South Sider, so I recall the Humboldt and the Garden and the Evergreen, which I think they changed that in the early 1960s.
I haven't thought of those in years, what they would have been when I was growing up. Now I remember them.
But you're right. You could tell the geography.
Yes.
By the exchange of the number you were being asked
Hempstead,
to call.
Hempstead. I remember Hempstead now. My goodness.
What, East Side, Woodburn?
What Hempstead?
Shepherd? No, these changed.
Oh.
W-O. So they're not
Woodruff?
Woodruff. That was it. Yes.
All right, everybody, moving along.
Okay.
That's a great parlor game.
It would be.
Put a bunch of people together over 65 and see if they can sort of draw the lines based on the telephone exchanges.
You're right about the north side. People didn't live on the north side of Milwaukee until?
They were early on, but there was no north side as such because the river runs north-south, so you have the east side and the west side. And it was not until the west side got big enough that the north side kind of intervenes, sort of emerges in the space between the river or between downtown, what became the west side. But that area had a very distinct identity by the later 1800s. Mm. Neighbors like Brewers Hill and the oldest one there, and newer ones like Halyard Park and Hillside and going north.
Yeah. Let's go next to, and we thank you very much for that quiz, Deborah.
Flagstaff.
Jim in Stevens Point. Hi.
Good afternoon. I wanted to talk about Third Ward a little bit. You know, as buildings evolve or in neighborhoods, Third Ward can't really happen until it really loses almost all its value so that somebody can come in and spend the money to make it beautiful again. I studied architecture down there in the 80s, and we had our share of fun up on the east side, but tonight we lost Century Hall. I'll tell you, we were all kind of crying in our beers.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I recall that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. In the Third Ward was almost a blank slate in the 1970s. No, the disinvestment had been such that there really was a chance to start over.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you know, places like Walker's Point, there's been kind of a pulse of life there. So it's not as if something has to be completely vacated, completely vaporized to be reborn. If there's not a strong presence there, you know, it sort of creates a vacuum into which development can move, you know, should there be the motive and the interest, the market.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of reborn, we did a show yesterday, and I had a chance to see the Milwaukee Art Museum. Boy, has it been reborn. Have you seen it yet?
Not yet.
Oh, it's such a treat, John. You're going
to
love it.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's really... They've reborn the museum.
Well, they brought back the Infinity Chamber?
Yes, they did. Did you like that?
Oh, yeah.
I had forgotten about it, actually. And then I walked in it again yesterday and thought, this is cool.
Back in the 60s, that was kind of a thing to do.
I'll bet it was. That was entertainment.
It was.
Yeah.
Sort of psychedelia.
Yeah.
Glass in all directions.
Right. It's very nice what they've done. It's very, very nice. Jim, thanks. One more phone call. It's all we have time for. And it's Dennis from Watoma. Hello, Dennis.
Hey there. How are you doing?
Just
all right.
Fine.
Well, I was just going to say to your guest, I had a tavern that was on the other side underneath the Bluemont Avenue Viaduct. I bought it from a guy named Peck.
Sure.
He had called it Peck's Hideout.
Sure.
We called our place Butch Cassidy's Hole in the Wall. And there was also Verna, Mike and Verna's was around the corner from us, although Mike was dead by the time we moved into the neighborhood. But as I understand it, when they rebuilt the viaduct, all of that went away.
You're right. Mike and Verna's, the 7-Eleven Club was down there. Fourth Base was down there before they moved National Avenue in West Dallas.
Yeah.
So that area, they call that sometimes the original Pigsville. And I think it had a total of 7 houses, one machine shop, and 2 taverns.
And yeah, we were one of them. And interestingly, the biggest deal that came along when I bought the place or remodeled the place, took it over from Peck, was putting air conditioning in. It was the only saloon in the valley with air conditioning. And this was like 1974, 1973.
Took them a while. I used to go down to Peck's and have their hard-boiled eggs.
Oh, yeah, and, of course, his wife used to do the cooking in the kitchen right behind the counter there and behind there where they lived, and then he'd send bar. And, of course, you had the trucking company right across
the road.
That's right,
yeah, Motor Transport, yep.
Mm. Yeah, and they went away not long after I did.
The trucks are still there. That's now a staging area for Miller Brewing. So that's still a very busy terminal. But you're right. The viaduct, which was first built in 1911, was rebuilt probably 15 years ago, and they wiped out every vestige of settlement underneath that bridge.
Oh, my goodness. So. Yeah, thank you very much, Verna. There's a name. One of my mom's best friends was Verna. Verna. Nobody's named Verna. John, thank you so much. It's a beautiful book, and I'm sure a lot of people will be purchasing it for the holidays, which is perfect.
Well, we timed it for a reason.
And you know you did. John Gerda, the book is The Milwaukee City of Neighborhoods. It has just been published. It's really, really beautiful, and John is a real treasure in this city, no doubt about that. We thank him always for being with us to talk about the history of Milwaukee. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production in Milwaukee.
People stop and stare, they don't bother me, for there's nowhere else on earth that I would rather be. Let the time go by.